Then going on to Leviticus 25, this has to do with the sabbatical year. The Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land I am giving you, the land shall observe a Sabbath for the Lord." Now, what is a Sabbath? Sabbath is a day of rest. So now the land observes a Sabbath. 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in the yield. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of complete rest for the land, a Sabbath for the Lord. You shall not sow your field or prune your vineyard. You shall not reap the aftergrowth of your harvest or gather the grapes of your unpruned vine. It shall be a year of complete rest for the land. You may eat what the land yields during its Sabbath, you, your male and female slaves, your hired and bound laborers who live with you, for your livestock also, for the wild animals in your land, all is yield, all that is yield shall be for food. You shall count off seven weeks of years. 7 weeks is seven sets of 7 days. 7 weeks of years would be seven sets of 7 years. Does that make sense? Or 49 years. And that gives 49, let's see, you should count off 7 weeks, 7 times 7 years, so that the period of 7 weeks of years gives 49 years. Then you shall have the trumpet sounded loud on the 10th day of the 7th month, on the Day of Atonement. You shall have the trumpet sounded throughout the land, and all of you shall hallow the 50th year, and you shall proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee year for you. You shall return, every one of you, to your property, and every one of you to your family. That 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. You shall not sow or reap the aftergrowth or harvest the unpruned vines, for it is a jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You shall eat only what the field itself produces. In this year of jubilee, you shall return every one of you to your property. When you make a sale to your neighbor or buy from your neighbor, you shall not cheat one another. When you buy from your neighbor, you shall pay only for the number of years since the jubilee. The seller shall charge you only for the remaining crop years. If the years are more, you shall increase the price. If the years are fewer, you shall diminish the price, for it is a certain number of harvests that is being sold to you, not the land. Oh, you only sell the harvests. You shall not cheat one another, but you shall fear the Lord God. You shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. This notion of the Sabbath, so you have not only some of the things that we talked about with the feast days. We talked about every week there is a Sabbath. We talked about every year you have certain feasts, and we talked about those different feasts at the last session. But then even after a certain number of years, you have that rest, that idea of Sabbath rest. Part of that, and we even do some of this even ourselves, the idea of not over-farming a piece of land. So there's even actually a natural reason for this. There's some debate among some scholars as to whether or not everyone had to observe the same Sabbath year for all their land altogether, or whether you could 1/7 of the people or 1/7 of your land, you know, the idea that you might kind of stagger that out in those years. It doesn't say that in Leviticus, but one of the things that as scholars kind of look through these things, they say, well, this is what was told them, but then as time went on, this is kind of how they lived it out. There's some debate about that, but that whole notion that even every 7 years there would be something special that would be marked. And then you have the seven sets of 7 years, and then you get to the 50th year, the Pentecost year, you could say. And then that was a time of special jubilee. Now, setting aside for a moment that question of whether or not you farm the land, that second thing we talked about that you just heard about, the jubilee year, that was the idea of proclaiming liberty. Everyone went back to their land. It's a very interesting concept. It's very unique understanding in the Old Testament times that the Israelites had about the gift of land or even the concept of slavery. What could happen if you were in need, if you were in distress, is that here you had a certain amount of land, or you yourself had your own person. And you'd say, well, what am I going to do? I cannot, you know, sustain myself. So you sell your land, or you sell yourself to become a slave or a servant to someone else who then pays for that. But the idea is that the land you have been given was given to you by God. So you can't give up your inheritance. That's a divine gift, and you know the sense about the ownership of the Holy Land. The Jews have a tremendous sense of dedication to that land. primarily out of a religious sense that this was given to them by God himself. And this comes out in this sense as well. So the land itself was given. So you can't give up what God himself has given to you. What you get to do is you just get to loan it for a while. So if you're in the first year right after the Jubilee, you can sell your land. You're selling the use of your land for 49 years, but after 49 years, you get it back again. A person who goes into slavery is a servant to someone else, but you get your liberty back again at a certain point. It's only for a certain time. It's a whole different way of thinking about this. But that's a very a specific sense of the Jubilee being ransomed, being set free, just as they were ransomed from slavery to the Egyptians. They're not meant to give up their inheritance or give up their liberty. Forever the Lord decrees it is to be returned to them on those Jubilee years. Now, do we celebrate Jubilee years? Okay, we celebrate them how often? 2000 was the last Jubilee. We actually celebrate Jubilee years every 25 years, which is interesting. So this is now in the Catholic Church. I mean, someone's beeping there. Is that okay? But we celebrate them every 25 years, and this is a tradition that began, I believe, in the 1200s, if I remember. I'd have to go back and check some of the specifics here. But there was a time at which they said, you know, this idea of celebrating a Jubilee, this was an important concept in the Old Testament times, and so it's been retained in the church. But if you celebrated a Jubilee every 50 years in the Old Testament times, well, now in the Christian era, the Jubilees should be more frequent. The idea is that we should have them more often. So it was now doubled, and so now we have them every 25 years. There would be the normal years of Jubilee, so 1975, 2000, 2025, and so forth. But occasionally, the Pope would proclaim an extraordinary Jubilee year, which I think was done as a Marian year in 1988. Anyway, if you remember something about that, there are different times at which the Holy Father might decree something that was special or something in particular. But the idea is we still continue to have Jubilees that are celebrated every 25 years. Some of the things that you saw with the Jubilee year, do you know any of the traditions they have in Rome around this? Is it? Yeah. They open up a special set of doors. There's on the front part of St. Peter's, there's a whole series of different doors, and normally you use certain doors when you come in or when you go out. There is, I think, five different sets of doors. Where there's one whole set of doors that, for most of the time, it's actually bricked up from the inside. They're shut up with brick. You actually have brick and mortar blocking that door up. But when you get to the Jubilee year, they take the brick and the mortar down, and the Pope comes to the front of that door to inaugurate the Jubilee and taps on it with a hammer, and the doors open up. And the idea of having those doors open up is you provide more ways to enter. In other words, the idea is that a time of Jubilee would be a time of pilgrimage, a time to come and then obtain special graces and favors. So you have to open up more doors to let more people in. And that's part of the symbolism behind that. So you have people who walk through, specifically, they walk through the Jubilee door in the year 2000 in order to enter into St. Peter's Basilica. And then other churches do that as well, the other major basilicas in Rome. And there are other traditions that are there, indulgences that are available, you know, special graces and favors, especially during that time of Jubilee to celebrate that great day. So Jubilees are still with us. We still have those Jubilees present in our own Christian understanding and era, adapted very much from the Jubilees that we see in the Old Testament time. Yeah.
Do you only get those special graces if you go to Rome?
Do you get those graces only if you go to Rome? The answer is no, because not everyone can go to Rome. And I remember from, I'd have to go back, this, I'm going off of my memory with this from the year 2000, that, as I remember, every bishop was given some authority to do certain things. So you had other devotions and other things. So there were special graces and favors that were attached to a whole series of things. So the idea is that is, it really is a Jubilee for the whole church. There is a special kind of grace, I think, attached to, you know, like the pontifical blessings that the Holy Father gives. And so there is a reason to then go to Rome, but it's not that it's reserved only to those who can go there. One small story about this is that not only could you go to confession, but there were also plenary indulgences attached to walking through the holy door. And to receive a plenary indulgence, you have to go to confession within a certain time period before or after. Well, that's a complete clean slate. I can remember visiting different churches, for example, St. Paul Outside the Walls, at different times at which you'd say, like, okay, well, is anyone going to confession? And there might be one confessor in one confessional, you know, and maybe one person was in line. I remember walking in shortly before the end of the Jubilee year, because there was a pilgrimage group that was over there. And there must have been 50 lines of people. I mean, it was something huge, 50 lines of people waiting to go to confession. And with 25 people in every line. I mean, it was just one of these things that was, that was amazing. And of course, and when was that? It was like December 28th, yeah. 2000. Nothing like waiting till the last minute before you. Okay, that's Catholics still do that, by the way. They still wait until the last minute sometimes. No, that's the idea of a jubilee and the special graces that are given in that time. So then going on to Numbers, as we work through some of these things, we're going to start skipping around more because there are we're really just looking at a handful of things. So we're on to the next set of passages, and this is Numbers chapter 3, the death of the sons of Aaron. These are the generations of Aaron and Moses at the time when the Lord spoke with Moses on Mount Sinai. These are the names of the sons of Aaron, Nadab, the firstborn, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. These are the names of the sons of Aaron, the anointed priests, whom he ordained to minister in the priest's office. But Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered unholy fire before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai. And they had no children. So Eleazar and Ithamar served as priests in the lifetime of Aaron, their father. There's another passage that went into just slightly more detail, because you say, well, what does that mean? That they offered unholy fire. And there's another account of this in Leviticus chapter 10. I'll just read this if you're looking for an alternative passage to describe this. Leviticus chapter 10. During this time, Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, took their censers, and strewing incense on the fire they had put in them, they offered up before the Lord profane fire. Okay, what does that mean? Such as had not been authorized. Fire, therefore, came forth from the Lord's presence and consumed them so that they died in his presence. Moses then said to Aaron, this is as the Lord said, through those who approach me, I will manifest my sacredness. In the sight of all the people of Israel, I will reveal my glory. But Aaron said nothing. And so then they removed the dead men from the camp. They went and took them. In their tunics, outside the camp, as Moses had commanded. One of the things that you see, especially in the Pentateuch, is there is a very severe sense of wanting to follow to the letter every command that was given to them. If in the part where Aaron is being ordained and his sons with him, and there are a whole series of commands. Like, so when you approach, you must first wash your garments. If you don't, you will surely die. And then you must anoint them with the blood. You must put the blood on the tip of their ear, and you must do this. And it was under threat of death. It was very, very severe thing. Now, why would that be such an important thing? The idea of recognizing the severe consequences of failing to abide by these prescripts of the Mosaic Law, these prescripts of this Israelite law governing Old Testament sacrifices and priesthood. Part of it is to emphasize the complete sacredness of what they're doing. That they're coming forth into a place that is consecrated by the Lord. It is itself entirely sacred. And so to do things, to say, well, I want to come before the Lord when I want to talk to him, is not to follow the command of the Lord. They can only come when called by the Lord or when they were performing a duty that they had been entrusted to perform. And so any self-will was forbidden. It was something that where they were to follow very specifically the command of the Lord. I think it highlights the sacredness of what they do, the sacredness of the place where they are coming, but then it also is, in a profound sense, really demands a complete investment of self. We think about the idea of doing something half-hearted or impure, or that this would be something profane to the Lord because it would be an incomplete sacrifice or offering.